The Zone is presented by Guaranteed Foods, delivering all-natural food to Midwestern families since 1958. Enjoy healthier food, more free time, free delivery, and better value. Go to GuaranteedFoods.com.
All right, we continue right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jason Anderson with you, Sterling Holmes, heading up until 2 o'clock. Dylan Michaels as well. We will talk some football here with Craig Stout, KC Sports Network, KCSN.substack.com, and the KC Laboratory Podcast. Craig, what's up, man? How are you, sir?
I'm doing phenomenally. The NFL draft is coming up shortly. I'm very excited to see who the Chiefs get to add to their roster here. This is always one of my favorite times of the year.
2 weeks away, man. 2 weeks away and counting. A little bit different experience this year from last year because we were talking about, you know, where we were going to be, who's going down there, who's going to be a part of it, you know, taking part in everything and just being a part of the experience. But this year, just simply watching it on television, but yet still defending Super Bowl champions. So that's the same.
Yeah, it is the same. It's funny how that works, that they just keep winning this thing, and we get to just consistently talk about how much it's not as fun to pick at pick 32, but hey, rings are great.
No doubt. It's the successful tax, and the Chiefs continue to pay it, which is fine. You will exchange that 32nd pick, much better than the 31st. So they will be picking dead last in the draft coming up 2 weeks from today. Let's talk about a move that was made a few days ago. Last time you and I talked, it was a discussion we were having about other moves the Chiefs may make, and somebody that was still out there that was a former Chief, but former Chief by a few weeks, and that is Mike Dana. They bring him back 3 years, $24 million. What's your reaction and takeaway in view of the Chiefs not only bringing back Mike Dana, but it's a multi-year deal, and the value certainly seems to be there?
Yes, absolutely. You know, when we had talked about this, Jason, it was always kind of framing it within the context of probably a one-year deal. You bring him back, you know, we've seen this team do that with guys like Derek Nnadi recently, Jet McKinnon, where it's just kind of like, hey, we like you on the roster. We want to keep you on the roster, but we're not making a long-term commitment. So I was surprised when I saw the three-year deal, but a pleasant surprise. Mike Dana does everything right. Like, you listen to Joe Cullen, Justin Reed, Chris Jones, Drew Tranquil, Nick Bolton, any of those guys, you listen to him talk, or you listen to him talk about Mike Dana, and the resounding thing is, yeah, when we turn on the tape, he's always in the right gap. He's always doing the right thing. He's always executing at the very highest technical level, and it's why he's translated so well to the NFL. Not the biggest guy, not the most athletic guy, but a technically sound, does-everything-right sort of guy. And as they brought in this youth movement on defense, as they brought guys around, you need guys that are, you know, showing up to practice and doing everything exactly right, showing up to games and doing everything exactly right, exemplifying what it means for Joe Cullen as a defensive lineman. You know, think of Felix and Ezekiel Adama, B.J. Thompson, Truman Jones, these guys that are young guys on the roster. You don't think that they're watching Mike Dana and going, oh, wow, that's exactly how I need to do things. That's why you bring a guy like this back in. And the fact that they could get him for $8 million APY, I know that it sounds like a lot, but here over the next couple of years, that's going to be such a small percentage of the cap. It's not going to preclude them from drafting another guy if they need to, adding another guy if they need to, or let's say Felix Adama takes over that role this year, and all of a sudden you feel really comfortable with him as a starting level pass rusher. Guess what? Mike Dana's salary is one that you're like, oh man, we're paying a whole bunch of money for him to be a backup to Felix. You're comfortable with that amount of money for what he brings to the team on early downs, what he can bring as a sub-rush guy, both inside, outside. He just made all the sense in the world to bring this guy back, getting him for 3 years, $24 million. I'm just over the moon about that move.
Yeah, I love it as well. I like they brought him back, and I think he's a really good player. I didn't know what the market would be. I sort of disagreed a little bit with the thought of like he's going to be priced out of the Kansas City Chiefs. And my view was, I thought the Chiefs would value him more than other teams would value him, because I think some teams, and maybe even whether it be fans or analysts, that would look at it and go, hold on, you're getting a defensive end that has a career 17 sacks. You're getting a defensive end whose career high is 6.5 sacks, and you're paying them how much money? Like, that doesn't seem to be the price of doing business. Whereas the Chiefs know, move them inside, move them outside. There may not be a team that wants to use a defensive end the way the Chiefs and Joe Cullen and Steve Spagnuolo use Mike Dana. And if you're going out and paying big money for a defensive end, you're probably wanting that guy to be your every down defensive end, be a guy that's going to rush the passer, impact the passing game. And Mike Dana does a lot of really good things. He does a lot of things really well. There isn't one particular thing that he's just simply a stud at. He's never going to get Josh Allen money that we saw, you know, the absurdity that came down yesterday. He's never going to get that. So I was a little surprised that, like, Mike Dana is going to be gone. I don't know, Craig, if the market came back to the Chiefs or this is what the market was, and the Chiefs told Mike Dana, hey, once we get the Snead deal done, this is the contract we'll offer you. If you want to sign that one, great. Because he said he chose the Chiefs, and yeah. I tend to believe there's that element of it, all things being equal. This is the contract. This is comparatively speaking to what I might get on the open market with other teams. I've looked at it. My agents looked at it. And now that the money is freed up with L'Jarius Sneed, it to me, it's not a surprise that Edwards-Helaire, Carson Wentz, and then Mike Dana pretty quickly after that, once it officially went through, were signed.
Yeah, that's one of those that, you know, I think the last time we talked, Jason, we were talking about Hollywood Brown and how, you know, he accepted less money. I put that in quotes or something like that. Could be an incentive base. You know, if you've got a contract on the table from another team that says, okay, well, if you get 7 sacks, now all of a sudden there's all this incentive money. Mike Dana might be looking at that and going, you know what? I'd rather take the guarantees. I'd rather take, you know, the devil I know here at home. I know that the team that I'm going to sign it with in Kansas City is going to love me, going to appreciate me, going to use me in my best way. I get to play next to Chris Jones and sometimes make him gas sound because I do everything right. And on top of that, they're taking care of me. You know, $8 million is not, you know, a small amount of money for a defensive end. I believe Jadeveon Clowney, what was it, $9, $10 million this year or something like that. It's not like he's lagging very far behind maybe that middle tier a pass rusher here, and you get to stay in Kansas City. Like, that's the part that matters to him. That's the part that really kind of, you know, moves the needle for him. I remember him coming out in the draft. I was very fortunate, and I got to interview him shortly after he was drafted. And it was just, you know, you talk to so many of these collegiate guys, and not to say that, you know, it's wrong, but they're like, hey, you know, trying to get to that second contract, trying to make myself the best player possible so I can maximize my value. Mike Dana's, the things that he was projecting were all about, hey, I want to be able to play everywhere. I want to be able to make other players better. I want to be the guy that's in the film room that's really knowing exactly what needs to do. I want to be the guy that in a big moment is in the right place at the right time and makes a play and therefore gets us off the field. It was less about the personal achievement. It was more about the team achievement. So Chiefs are still taking care of him. Don't get me wrong, but I think his priorities are certainly different or a little bit, you know, a little bit shifted from maybe some of the guys that are just like, hey, I'm hitting the open market. I'm going to get as much money as I possibly can. He is a lot more comfortable. I want to stay in Kansas City with Joe Cullen, playing next to Chris Jones. That maximizes me as a player, and it helps me maximize the team.
Craig Stout's our guest, kcsn.substack.com, the KC Laboratory podcast. Should also let people know the KC Sports Network draft guide is out, available to download. It is an incredible resource. It's one of the I don't think you guys would take offense in me saying that, you know, there are two resources I use, the KC Sports Network draft guide and the Beast with Nate Tice. And Nate Tice, you know, it's sort of overall. But if you're a Chiefs fan, the KC Sports Network draft guide is an absolute go-to and must-have. It is awesome. So I love that it's out and can start looking through everything and see how the team fits are, see the different guys in there that you know, Matt's guy and Kent's guy and things like that. I love seeing the guys that they particularly like. One of those last year that were a couple of guys at KC Sports Network who they really liked was Felix and Udike Uzomah. They took him at the end of the first round. It was a great story. Hometown kid, He was at the draft attending it just as a fan, walking around because it was happening in his backyard, right? And last year was a slower burn and wondering, you know, what the development was going to be. What percentage do you think, and maybe it's 0% to you, I don't think it's 0%, but what percentage do you think the Mike Dana bringing him back on a three-year deal is about a concern of FAU being an every-down defensive lineman or defensive end or filling the role of a first-round draft pick defensive end?
I mean, I don't think that it's a very high percent that the Felix role, you know, influences Mike Dana. Now, certainly, if Felix had showed up last year, all of a sudden, you know, pops off at 12 sacks, plays the run really excellently, sure, they're going to be focused on, hey, we feel comfortable with the guys that we have in house. I think it may be more to the fact of a Charles Minnehue is hurt. He's not going to be around this year. You know, he wasn't around for part of last year. They don't know that they can count on that guy being a guy that, you know, really fits into the rotation and continuing to build on the veteran depth of this. You can never have too many pass rushers. Mm-hmm. Mike Dana has now been a part of two defensive lines that have helped get to the passer at a greater clip than all but about seven teams in the NFL over the past 2 years. Like, I know that we think of Steve Spagnuolo's defense, we think of the blitz element, we think of how he's getting pressure with all the exotic looks that he brings and things like that, but he still rushes four the majority of the time, and that four-man rush gets home. And it, you know, yes, a lot of people think of Chris Jones as a part of that, but a lot of the stunts, a lot of the games that they play with Mike Dana are so affected. We used to joke all the time that Mike Dana on the spike on a tech stunt, which is a defensive tackle looping over a defensive end to rush from the outside. We see Chris Jones do it all the time. He gets free. Chris Jones gets free because of the attention that Mike Dana has. We used to joke that Mike Dana, you were kind of in the damned if you do, damned if you don't, because if you don't peel off to pick up Chris Jones, he's getting to the quarterback. And if you leave Mike Dana on a one-on-one, as you know the Los Angeles Chargers will tell you time and time again, Justin Herbert will, he's going to win on the spike. So you've got to have a player that can execute those sort of things at a high level to free up your super, you know, elite pass rusher that you can align him wherever you want. Chris Jones decides my matchup is at defensive end this week, then guess what, Mike? In some packages, you're playing three technique this week, and you've got to have a guy that can do that. And so, yes, Felix matters in this equation because he's going to be a factor moving forward. I fully expect that in the dime packages and sub packages, he's going to be a good pass rusher for this team because he's one of the few guys that can win quickly along with Chris Jones. But you've got yourself a guy that can be the complement to your biggest and best defensive investment at this point. So I think it's more tied to we've got Chris back. We're going to be leaving Legarius Sneed out of the equation. We need to make sure that this pass rush stays as good as it can be because we're going to have some vulnerabilities in the secondary that we didn't have before simply by moving from Legarius Sneed. So I think it's more tied to that than specifically tied to, you know, worrying about the development of the first-round pick last year.
Craig Stout is our guest, kcsn.substack.com, the KC Laboratory podcast. We noted charges for Rashee Rice. I'm not a lawyer. I don't claim to be one. I'm not going to even discuss of what it may mean legally. What I do think it means is there will be, and this was a guess anyway, or what people thought anyway, but I don't think anything changed with the charges, there will be some sort of a suspension. I'd be shocked if there wasn't, whether that's 2 games, 4 games, 6 games. I'll probably land on expecting 4. If it's more than that, okay, a little disappointed, if it's but understand it. If it's less than that, okay, a little surprise. Does this change in your mind the path, the strategy for the Chiefs moving forward a couple of weeks from now, whether it's day one, day two, day three, in decisions they make around wide receiver with still the unknown of what the suspension will be for Rashee Rice, but with this, the charges coming down, at least from those that understand it way more than I do, there's at least a feeling that this will be wrapped up before the season starts.
Yeah, it definitely sounds that way. You know, obviously the charges are brought. He had, you know, 24 hours to turn himself in. It, you know, he has kind of posted on Instagram. His lawyers basically said the same thing that, you know, he's complying with everything here. So I would expect that we're going to see that he's going to turn himself in. This is going to undergo due process. So, yes, I'm with you. I'm not a lawyer. I don't want to dive much further into it than that. But from a suspension standpoint, I don't know that this moves the needle any differently than it would have. You know, if it's 2 to 4 games, I don't think the Chiefs are supremely worried about what they can field this year, because again, they've done this in the past. We've had multiple times over the past several years where you've had a player that was a feature or a significant part of one side of the ball that had to miss some time, and they didn't go out and make a reactionary move. Now, I know that the inevitable thing that everybody's going to think there is the Tyreek Hill thing, you know, back when they drafted Mecole Hardman, and I totally get that, and I think that maybe they thought that might have been a more significant thing than it actually turned out to be. So I think that there's some dissimilarities there. What I'm really keeping an eye on is, does this, you know, kind of make the trust level from Andy Reid reduced? Because we've seen what that looks like if Andy Reid doesn't trust a player anymore, doesn't trust them to handle their business off the field, they are done with them very, very quickly. Now, that's not to say that Rashee Rice is going to get cut by any means, but not a guy that they're potentially, you know, targeting for a second contract here. So why wouldn't you, in that scenario, try and focus, you know, very hard on making your wide receiver room a little more built out with youth, a little more built out with some depth in a really good wide receiver class? And we say that every year, but it just makes more sense to insulate yourself against some of that. They don't want to be in a scenario where now all of a sudden their best wide receiver, the guy that they are going to throw volume targets at outside of Hollywood Brown, but more specifically in 2025 and 2026, they need more bodies there. So I can see from a draft perspective that maybe, you know, the target becomes, okay, we've got a guy that we're very interested hey, we've got a guy that we're very interested in, and we might have to circle back again. Maybe we look again at round 3 or round 4 or something like that and add another body to the room just to make sure that we raise the floor enough to where if Rashee Rice has to miss time, if we lose that trust level in him, if we don't think he's part of the future going forward, we're at least taking a couple more bites at the apple on offense to try and insulate ourselves from getting into a position like they were at the beginning of last year, where that wide receiving core was just absolutely letting them down right and left. We've seen Brett Veach be aggressive in his corrections. I would fully expect that if he's hearing from Andy Reid, which, again, what's a playbook in the car? Like, that's probably something that Andy Reid is just as upset about, you know? You can't do that, man. You got to keep that with you, you know? So
it's like, leave the gun, take the cannolis.
Exactly.
Leave the weed, take the playbook.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, leave all that there. Don't leave the playbook there, because there's precious cargo in that, you know? I'm looking at it more from a trust level than anything. I think that's going to crop up very soon, because, you know, this wide receiving group is good in the draft, but there's a ton of value in the first 3 rounds. So if they take a couple bites of the apple early, I think that tells you exactly what they think about Rashee Rice.
What do you think they do at tackle for this team? It's still an open, you know, spot, and you know, Donovan Smith is out there, and I think that's been sort of an easy, like, well, they can just go and get Donovan Smith. I compared a little bit to a couple of years ago when there was a defensive end question, and all summer it was like, well, they'll just go get Melvin Ingram. Well, it's kind of understood they're going to get Melvin Ingram, right? Well, they're going to bring back Melvin Ingram, so we should stop. Oh, Melvin Ingram signed somewhere else. Oh, wait, now what do they do? And that was after the draft also, so we saw what was happening, and they still had a hole there. How do you think they address this? Is it a Donovan Smith? Is it a move up in the first round when people are talking about wide receiver? Maybe it's for tackle. Do they address it in a couple of different spots and maybe throw some numbers at the offensive line this go-around with maybe what is expected a more offensive-focused draft?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would be – at this point, I'm going to be shocked if there are – you know, as many defenders as offensive players drafted from the Chiefs this year. Like, it would be completely shocking to me if that happened. Obviously, that might be what the value is, but I do see offensive tackle in a trade-up as a thing that could happen. Marius Mims is this guy that's kind of a very nebulous offensive tackle. Yeah. His tape is elite. He's just barely played. And so do the Chiefs feel comfortable in a guy like that? Do they feel comfortable in moving up for a potentially elite talent that just doesn't have very many reps yet? And you turn around and you hand him to Andy Heck and you say, work your magic, which he typically always does. I could see a move like that, a move for Guyton. You know, there's a couple of guys in the first round that I could see. Second round guys, you know, Patrick Paul from Houston that has Andy Reid's requisite arm length. I believe he has 36-inch vines. Like, that's, you know, Andy Reid is immediately perking up with that sort of thing. There's a couple of different players that I could see them targeting in the draft. But I think much like last year, their fallback plan is going to be, hey, when we get out of day two of the draft, we don't feel comfortable with any of these players as a starting level player for us. So let's turn around and let's see what's on the veteran market. Let's see if a Donovan Smith wants to come back and play again. You know, I said this on the lab the other week, but you know, Donovan Smith is one of the youngest offensive tackles that's available in free agency. And I know that we all think of him as just kind of this elder statesman because he's been around for a long time, but he's 30. Like, he still has some years in front of him. Yes, he wasn't fully healthy all last year, but when he was healthy, he looked pretty good. So get him healthy, bring him back in. Mekhi Becton is the youngest guy that's still on the, you know, on the market right now. Go and try and get a guy like that instead. You know, take a couple of bites at the apple, bring, you know, some competition in for Wanya Morris and make sure that you're not just turning around and going, okay, kid, yeah, this is yours. You got to push him a little bit. But I do think they're going to wait until after the draft. The pocket's got to be right. They got a trade-up move where they can go get a Mims or a Guyton or somebody like that that they're absolutely in love with. I think they'll do it. I think that that's really where they want to spend a lot of capital, is making sure that offensive line is built. I mean, again, I figure they're going to take interior offensive linemen later in the draft just because of the contracts that they have expiring next year. But I think that they really want to focus on building that through the draft, not spending on guards and tackles and free agency if they don't have to. You know, they did last year with Juwan Taylor. Who will see? You know, we'll see on that if they regret that move or if they feel comfortable with that move. But I can see offensive tackle being one of the two trade-up possibilities with wide receiver,
yeah,
specifically in the first round, also in the second round. And if they don't have the offensive tackle there, I feel a lot more comfortable in their ability to go after the draft and just say, okay, Donovan, let's run this back. Let's go get you another ring. You and Wanya have a relationship already, so we're cool with all of this.
Last one for you. You know, last time, this will be the last time we talk before they draft. So the next time we have a conversation will be post-draft. Do you have a draft crush that's developing for a couple of weeks you would like to see the Chiefs take, whether that's in the first round all the way through seventh, or, heck, undrafted priority free agent?
I would love if I had a draft crush for you that's an undrafted free agent. Let me take that back. Carson Steele, running back out of UCLA, bring him in here with Isaiah Pacheco. Big dude that has decent-ish vision. I would be fine with him as a UDFA. As far as draft crush, a lot of guys that are in the mid-rounds that I really, really like. A lot of the early-round guys that, you know, we've got Mason McCormick out of South Dakota State University, interior offensive lineman. I would love if the Chiefs were able to land a guy like that. He's just going to be able to play so many different positions. I love him. Another interior offensive lineman a little bit later, Hunter Norzad out of Penn State. He played center for Penn State for the past couple of years, but he played 4 years at Citadel as a left tackle. And Andy Reid loves those guys that have that versatility. So both those two guys for offensive linemen that I like. I love Malik Washington, wide receiver out of Virginia. I think he makes so much sense for what the spacing concept and the way that you can sink into a zone. I think he would just be an elite add for the Chiefs. And then Ryan Watts, who is a free safety / cornerback out of Texas, an insane testing cornerback that has safety and corner experience. Stop me if you've heard that before as a day three target.
Yeah.
Chiefs love kind of picking guys up like that. So those are my four guys that I'm really looking at. The first three, I love the way that they play their game. Ryan Ruff is more of a, hey, they gambled on this profile before. I would love for them to take another gamble on it again.
Awesome. I love that you came up with four of them and a priority free agent.
Awesome. All of those round three or later.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. And unfortunately, you haven't given this much thought, so that's too bad, Craig. Craig Stout, KCSN.substack.com, the KC Laboratory Podcast. Craig, you're the man, as always. Really appreciate the time, brother. Enjoy the draft in a couple of weeks, and we'll catch up soon.
You too. Talk to you later.
Absolutely. There's Craig Stout, KCSN.substack.com. Check out the draft guide. He's got four different draft crushes, two of them interior offensive linemen, one a wide receiver, and one a cornerback/safety, including he gave us Carson Steele, the running back from UCLA, as a priority free agent, a bigger guy, 6'2", 230, as someone that he may see the Chiefs bring in. I've sort of been looking at whether it's not necessarily smaller running backs. To me, the size of the running back hasn't really mattered. Size doesn't matter. That's what I've heard about running backs. It's more the speed. It's how quickly they get places. And I've got Keelan Robinson's a guy that I like as a priority free agent, just because he runs a 4.4, has a 1.55 10-yard split, so he gets there fast and he's fast. I want that for the Chiefs. I want them to find somebody that has a burst that gets there quickly. Enough with the methodical, slow, let me turn around and survey, and Pacheco looks like he's running fast, or running, it's just because he hates the ground. And Edwards-Helaire does a nice job, but, you know, they don't have that guy that can just turn, boom, run, get there fast. We'll see if they take somebody like that or as a priority free agent. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back, continue rolling along. Let's continue with our NFL football, our Chiefs football discussion. We'll do that coming up next here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you to Craig Stout joining us, breaking down the Chiefs and the draft coming up. 913-912-4810 is the text line. We talked a lot of Royals in the first hour. We also talked about Scott Drew turning down the interest from Kentucky, staying at Baylor. He and his family deciding that was in the best interest for them, that they did not want to leave. Pretty comfortable. The only place his kids have ever known is Waco, so they are staying there. Kentucky is now on to the next one, trying to figure out who their next coach is. And Scott Drew essentially is showing that he's a lifer at Baylor, because in this same coaching carousel, he turned down Louisville and Kentucky for their head coaching jobs. He ain't going anywhere, which is also, by proxy, great news for Kansas State, because the flirting with Baylor and Jerome Tang doesn't have to take place. Baylor gets to keep their coach. They have God on their side, according to Chip Gaines, and that's why Scott Drew stayed at Baylor. That was news that came out right before we started the show at 10 o'clock. We've talked a lot of Royals in the first hour as well, and certainly talking to Craig Stout there about the Chiefs, and a good portion of that conversation about Mike Dana, what it means bringing him back, the entire defensive line returning. I mean, Chris Jones, Mike Dana, Derek Nnadi, Mike Pinnell, Turk Wharton, Malik Herring, B.J. Thompson, who they drafted last year, obviously FAU part of that. Like, bringing back, like we talked about, boy, they have Karlaftis, FAU, and B.J. Thompson are the only guys they have under contract on the defensive line once the season ends. And now they've got everybody that they had a year ago back on this defensive line. I don't know if that's an indication of what they think of the NFL draft, if they think of the interior defensive line, or they think of the defensive ends to bring those same guys. A minute, who they didn't have to bring back, but sure. You know, you get the point.
Yeah.
Because going into this offseason, it was they have Karlaftis, FAU, and B.J. Thompson, and an injured Omenihu. So I didn't mean to omit Omenihu, but it was the injury. We didn't know how long he was going to be out to start the season. And it could be a little bit like last year. I mean, he missed the first 6 weeks of the season with suspension. He may miss the first 4 weeks with PUP, depending on his progress and his rehab, which then you get a more extended look at FAU with an expectation of what to expect from Mike Dana, Karlaftis, Chris Jones, etc. So maybe that's an indication of what they think of the defensive line and defensive end draft class in the pockets that they'll be drafting, because that's different. The pockets they'll be drafting as opposed to, well, you know, there aren't any really great defensive ends. Oh, really? No, there's some good defensive ends in the class. Just there also might be some secondary ones, but it might be, well, these guys are going to be mid-second rounders, early second rounders. We're picking at 64. We can't really afford to move up if it's for a defensive end, because we've taken defensive end the last couple of years. If we're going to spend extra capital, it's probably tackle or wide receiver we're going to spend it on.
Well, and it's also, you know, you have Darius Robinson from Mizzou, but is he going to be there? He's been falling down. Mm-hmm. Are you getting a little too... With Fisk at 32, is he more of a, you know, late 30s? Where do you view him? I mean, you're right. Are you going to be reaching for a guy there?
Mm-hmm.
Or do you even want to spend another first rounder there?
Or did bringing Mike Dana back give you the flexibility that you don't have to think defensive end in this draft? Because you took B.J. Thompson as a project last year.
Sure.
Oh, and FAU was a first round draft pick. You'd like to see him step up and play some good football this year if the opportunity, and the opportunity should be there for him. He's got to seize that opportunity.
And also, you know, I thought interior defensive line made a lot of sense. You want someone next to Chris Jones who's more of a game wrecker. Derek Nnadi, he's fine. Turk mm-hmm. Warden or whatever, he's fine. Mike Pinnell, I know we all love him because of what he's done in playoff runs. I'm a huge Mike Pinnell supporter. I was the previous stint he had here in Kansas City. I'll still be a Mike Pinnell supporter, but for, you know, all 17 games and then through the playoffs, I don't know if that's really your game plan.
Mike Pinnell, see you in November.
Yes. Hey, come on in November, buddy.
Let's go.
So I'm sitting here going, well, Tavondre Sweat would have been a lovely pick, especially at 64.
Yeah.
But then you have the DWI. And do you want another car incident?
Nope.
No, you don't.
For the Chiefs, not sure you can do that. Now, he didn't leave the scene of the crime. The other driver did, which is odd. Since he got in the car accident, he was the one that was drinking and driving. But the other car, the driver left, so maybe they were doing the same thing,
this
collision. But, you know, you hear Sweat, DUI, and the driver leaves the scene of the crime. You're like, what? Oh, wait, he stayed. Well, at least he's got that going for him, because you leave the scene of the accident, you ain't even on the Chiefs. Fifth round, why is this guy still here? Don't know, but we ain't taking him. We're not drafting him, not with the BS they've got going on right now. So that news, like, you're right.
But before that, I'm going, well, the Chiefs could get, let's just say, for example, hypothetically, Ladd McConkey, 32, and then Tavondre Sweat, 64 years, and you're going, phenomenal.
Okay, yeah.
And let's even say, if you want to go...
No idea who's going to play left tackle, but certainly,
yes. Please, KU fans, Dominique Pooney at 96. Now, I don't think that he's necessarily going to be a left tackle in the NFL, but there is your super sub, your souped-up Cam Irving, if you will, your souped-up Andrew Wiley.
Put Nos on Cam Irving.
But...
Got some aftermarket wheels on Cam Irving. Got a new Bose speaker set with some
the 12-inch subs
in the trunk.
Hydraulics.
That's right. Look at this bouncing. They got some spree wells as they're spinning while you come to the stop.
Dude, great shoes. Great pull from you right there.
Thank you.
But I don't know where the Chiefs go at left tackle. I don't know if it's in the draft because I don't know if they're getting high enough to get a guy that you feel comfortable with. I'm still going to be the dude screaming from the mountaintops that I believe in Wanya Morris, and the reason being is, let me say this, I'm not going to say Wanya Morris is going to be an all-pro left tackle, but I think he's a serviceable...
Cut that to where we just hear Sterling say, Wanya Morris is going to be an all-pro left tackle.
He's going to be serviceable, and what I saw last year, people keep focusing on the negatives. How often do you see rookie tackles, even who are drafted top five, have these low points? Andrew Thomas was almost ran out of New York his first year's rookie season, and now he's one of the best tackles in football. Rookie tackles, it's a massive development, a massive change. What we did see was the lows, yes, but we saw some highs against some very good pass rushers. What you do from your rookie season to your sophomore year and your junior year going forward, second, third year, I should say, in the NFL is you'll see the lows start washing out more and the norm will start being either the highs or the average reps. I think you'll start seeing that more with Wanya Morris going forward. I think we're judging him too harshly on the rookie season against Khalil Mack, where Khalil Mack had a resurgence last year. Well, let's judge him on the average. Let's judge him more on the what were the average reps from him going forward. I think that'll be the norm for him going into his second year.
I think any of the negatives with Wanya Morris have to be taken with a grain of salt with what you're talking about. I looked at Wanya Morris and thought, okay, there were some real positives there. And if you go into the offseason and you've got some things to improve on, if they had to go in this season with Wanya Morris,
You know where the deficiencies were last year. You saw him up close and personal. It wasn't that he was just filling in from time to time. Donovan Smith went down. You had to then play Wanya Morris at left tackle. They figured out how to get around it, but you saw the issues that were there when he played left tackle. Can you improve on those if those are the things you focus on? Yep. MJ Melendez, your issue was playing outfield. You couldn't do it. You were terrible. He goes in the offseason, and all he does is work on left tackle, or you know, outfield, 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 outfield. Okay, great. Now you're better as an outfielder, and you're not taking your defensive efficiencies to the plate with you, and now you're better hitter. Wanya Morris, here's your issue. Here's an issue. Here's an issue. You go into the offseason, Andy Heck, whatever you're doing in the weight room, the training, you work on those things because you may need to play left tackle. And if you do, can you improve the floor of your deficiencies while still having some of the things that made you a pretty good player? Because run blocking was pretty decent for Wanya Morris, where that was lacking with Donovan Smith.
What I see with Wanya Morris is a good left tackle who can also play right and a versatile player who, if they do not like the Kansas City Chiefs, like the Juwan Taylor contract, eventually, well, is Wanya Morris going to be your right tackle of the future and Juwan Taylor's your right tackle of the now? Which I think there's also a possibility there. I just don't see the Chiefs having the ability to get up and get a quote-unquote sure thing. And again, sure thing rookies at tackle. Yeah. Even Alt, for example. Like, Andrew Thomas was a top five draft pick at left tackle. He was a sure thing. Not good as rookie year. Like, if the Chiefs were able to get Alt, I think people are going to have such high expectations. They're not getting Alt, by the way. But just a first-round left tackle, such high expectations when that's not the reality of the position transitioning from college to the NFL. Now, again, I would still like to see Donovan Smith back. I think that's actually the name that I would go after when you saw what Tyron Smith got for the Jets. Chiefs, sorry, you're not giving up to $20 million for a oft-injured, again, all-pro when he's there, but oft-injured left tackle. Donovan Smith, quite frankly, I think did a fine enough job, and he's a guy who I don't think is going to clamor you have to make him the starter, while some other players are going to say, if I'm not the starter, I'm going to be I'm going to be pissed off. I don't think you're going to see that with Donovan Smith. And by the way, you hate seeing injury, but was that almost best case scenario for the Chiefs last year?
You got a chance to see Wanya Morris.
What if Donovan Smith, again, if he played the entire season, the Chiefs win a Super Bowl, we're all thrilled. Mm-hmm. But best case scenario, again, we don't want him to be injured, but best case scenario was you won the Super Bowl, and you got to see an extended look at Wanya Morris, going back to your whole conversation of now you know his deficiencies.
Yeah.
Now you know what they need to work on in game action, not OTAs, not training camp, not preseason, but actual regular season action against Khalil Mack, the Bosa brothers, or at least a Bosa. Like, you saw it against legitimate pass rushers. This is huge for Kansas City going forward.
Yeah, the Rashee Rice issue, which we'll get into and continue to talk about as it gets closer to the draft. We're 2 weeks away. How much that does change the Chiefs' draft strategy. But there's no doubt there is a hole at left tackle. And what I've talked about is if I had my choice, if people are saying you trade up to get somebody, if that's what the Chiefs are doing, what's your choice? They trade up to get a number one wide receiver or a guy that plays left tackle and you feel good about plugging in and playing him at left tackle for the next 5-6 years? Give me the left tackle. Give me that guy that you trade up and get. Because while I do believe Rashee Rice will be suspended, I feel good about Rashee Rice moving forward. And there are other good receivers, even if it's like this guy can be a high number two receiver in the NFL. Okay, I get him at 64, and I get Rashee Rice, this guy for this year, Hollywood Brown. But I get a guy that can be a starting left tackle for the next 5-6 years. Awesome. Great. I'm not trying to ignore the wide receiver position, and clearly they aren't doing that. But I also don't want to have a revolving door at left tackle when Joe Tooney might be on the last year of his contract and don't know about Trey Smith or Creed Humphrey moving forward. I don't want to have to keep integrating a left tackle without an all-pro left guard to help him out along the way, because that has certainly helped, whether that be Donovan Smith or Wanya Morris, having Joe Tooney there. So I would love, if the Chiefs are going to trade up, then go trade up and get, you know, if Latham or... I mean, I don't know if Amarius Mims, if they've got him as a first-round grade and he's sitting there at 21, 22, you go and get him. Or do the Chiefs feel comfortable in Wanya Morris, and do they feel comfortable bringing back a Donovan Smith if you can, you know, grab a Kingsley Suamataia at the end of the first round? or trade back and maybe get Kingsley in the early second round, a guy who's got all the traits, everything but raw, and you can slowly integrate that guy at left tackle, and then all of a sudden you may have your left tackle of the future that you didn't have to trade up and get. But he ain't a guy you're going to draft and then say he's now our left tackle moving forward. Those are the guys that are going to go in the top 10, 15 picks of the draft.
Yeah, and even like a Jordan Morgan who's been, if you do a lot of mock drafts, he's been maybe there at 32. He's kind of on the cusp at the end of that first round. He does feel like he feels like a former Chief. Like the finesse left tackle, if you will.
Yeah.
Right? Doesn't he feel more, because the Chiefs offensive line has had this transformation of a finesse offensive line to more of that nasty streak with Joe Tooney, Creed, and Trey Smith, obviously.
Yeah.
But on the
Trey Smith in there is has brought the bleep you.
Yeah. But when you're looking at a guy like Jordan Morgan, do the Chiefs want to get a guy who's maybe more mobile, who might not be as great in the run blocking situation, but more of a pass blocker? That does seem to fit more of the Chiefs' game plan.
I would tell you, with the 32-inch arms, he may not even be on their board.
Correct. Correct.
With 32-inch arms, they may not even be. They may not even know who Jordan Morgan is. They don't even have the name next to it. It just says 32. Okay, yeah, we're moving on. Fautanu, who people may think may move to guard. But that's a guy who's the arm length, the size, the athleticism is good enough. He's an older prospect. He's, I think like by the time the season starts, he'll be 24 years old. But I don't think he'll be there in the 20s either. So, that's also that case. We do need to take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll wrap this out. We'll talk with Daniel Harms, RJR Football, coming up at noon, and get his thoughts on some of these same conversations we're having and where he think the Chiefs may go. What position they may attack. I also wonder if he thinks this is going to be more of an offensive-centric draft. We've seen Brett Veach spend so many resources on the defense, especially the first four rounds or so. Is the expectation maybe that will be the offensive side, especially with the re-signing of so many people on the defensive side of the football? We'll take a timeout, come back. More Zone next. All right, wrapping up this hour, we'll continue talking some Chiefs. Daniel Harms, RGR Football, looking forward to the conversation with him. So smart as he breaks down the draft and scouting and things like that. We'll talk with him about what he wants to see from the Chiefs. 2 weeks away, huge draft ahead of the Chiefs. What do they do at left tackle? What do they do at wide receiver? Are they done on the defensive side? I can't imagine that being the case. But where else may they look? Is it time to start drafting higher in the draft, to tight end, to think about life without Travis Kelce? Or did Travis Kelce resting at the end of the season and looking like he did in the postseason make you think, well, actually, he sort of looks like the old Travis Kelce more? So maybe they're just a little bit of rest, maybe a little more load management for Travis Kelce. Maybe those injuries early in the season were a bigger deal than we thought. Daniel Harms coming up next.